Welcome to OncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Riley Kandel. During Esophageal Cancer Awareness Month, OncLive sat down with Peter Enzinger, MD, to discuss evolving standards and ongoing areas of uncertainty in the diagnosis and management of esophageal cancer. In the exclusive interview, Enzinger highlighted common diagnostic and staging pitfalls in newly diagnosed disease, outlined the evolving role of surgery, chemoradiation, and multidisciplinary care, and reviewed emerging targeted therapeutic strategies shaping treatment decisions in esophageal and gastroesophageal cancers. He also discussed ongoing clinical trials of interest, including studies evaluating zanidatamab and pembrolizumab-based non-operative approaches and novel combinations incorporating Claudin 18.2 targeted therapy. Jumping right into it, what are the most common diagnostic or staging pitfalls you see in esophageal cancer? And when should patients be referred to a high-volume center?
I think that the main pitfall is that we often don't know for certain if a patient is metastatic or not. And that often requires additional testing. And the testing does need to be completed because if the patient has a good response, in retrospect, we won't know if the patient was metastatic or not. So it's actually important to do your homework, to dot your I's, cross your T's up front to make absolutely sure that we know if the patient is metastatic or not. And this might include following up with a biopsy or doing an MRI and a PET CT scan. But ultimately, it is not wise to assume that somebody is metastatic when really the difference is life and death in the localized disease setting.
Moving right along, how should staging be approached in newly diagnosed esophageal cancer? And what imaging or modalities are central to guide treatment decisions?
So we often see patients who have already had a diagnosis of esophageal cancer, and that's typically done through an upper endoscopy, an EGD. But often the other tests are still lacking, and that would include primarily a PET CT scan and then any sort of follow-up imaging like an MRI. The other thing that often is missing is that we don't have the biomarkers yet. Typically, we need to get MMR, we need to get PD-L1 CPS, and then for the metastatic patients, we want to get Claudin 18.2 and HER2, because that really impacts how we end up treating the patients.
What is the current role of surgery in esophageal cancer, and how do you determine which patients benefit most from surgery versus definitive chemoradiation or systemic therapy?
So surgery continues to be the most important curative treatment for this disease. We are increasingly moving away from surgery for esophageal squamous cell carcinoma, and many centers now will defer surgery unless there is residual disease after initial chemoradiation therapy. But the same doesn't hold true for adenocarcinomas, where chemotherapy alone rarely induces a complete response. So surgery is important as part of the treatment for curative attempt. Ultimately, I think as our treatments get better, our goal is to move away from surgery and to focus on non-operative treatments. For instance, with MSI-high cancers now, most of the patients are cured without surgery. And I think our hope, of course, is that we can extend that to patients who are not MSI-high in the future.
Why are multidisciplinary approaches critical for esophageal cancer management? And what key specialties should be involved in early care planning?
Multi-D visits have traditionally been very important in esophageal and gastric cancer, but the interesting thing is that we've really moved away from radiation therapy for the adenocarcinomas. In our practice, we would always have a surgeon, a radiation oncologist, and a medical oncologist see all of these patients. But now that radiation really has been sidelined for the adenocarcinoma patients, it really comes down to just medical oncology and surgery. So it is, in a sense, still a multi-D visit, but it's really two specialties instead of three. We still have the radiation oncologists, of course, involved for the squamous cell carcinoma patients, but for adenocarcinoma, treatment, frankly, has gotten simpler.
Shifting gears, which emerging targeted therapies or biomarker-driven approaches have the most potential for esophageal cancer today?
I think the most important biomarker-driven therapies right now include targeting HER2 and Claudin 18.2. So for her too, now we've had agents for more than a decade, and trastuzumab and more recently T-DXd have been important components of treatment for HER2-positive disease. We've only recently gotten the approval of zolbetuximab for CLDN18.2-positive patients, but this is really sort of the limit of what we have for targeted therapy right now. I think the future is not only to expand these particular targets, so having more ways in which we target HER2, but also more ways in which we target CLDN18.2, but we also hope to expand to other targets, FGFR, MET, EGFR. There are things like EpCAM and CCAM that can be targeted. So I think the hope is to expand these biomarker-driven therapies as quickly and as expansively as possible.
Looking ahead, are there any clinical trials or novel strategies that have the potential to change the standard of care in esophageal cancer?
The most immediate ones are the Horizon GEA, which was just presented at the ASCO GI in January, which showed the benefits of adding zanidatamab to standard platinum and 5-FU therapy with or without tislelizumab. I think the expectation among the experts in this area is that the drug will become approved. It's just the details that we're not certain about yet. Will it be approved broadly with any checkpoint inhibitors, or will it be approved without checkpoint inhibitors? Will it specifically be approved with tislelizumab? So I think the question is the uncertainty as to exactly how the FDA will approve zanidatamab. The other interesting question is the downstream effects of zanidatamab. We're beginning to hear that T-DXd, for instance, doesn't seem to be as efficacious after zanidatamab as it is after trastuzumab-based therapies. So the downstream effects of more effective frontline therapy will also be interesting to follow. The other area where I think we should hopefully be seeing some news soon is KEYNOTE-975, which basically looks at non-operative therapy for localized esophageal cancer. This is a study in which standard chemoradiation therapy is given with or without pembrolizumab. Although I think that in adenocarcinoma, the benefit may be limited, I think for squamous cell carcinoma, I do see the potential there for having a statistically significant result. And potentially there we'll have immunotherapy available as well now for the locally advanced patients. The Lucerna is dear to my heart because I'm involved with that study. Right now, for instance, we are having difficulty deciding between a checkpoint inhibitor and anti-claudin therapy. And the question is which one would be more efficacious, which one would lead to the longer survival. And the nice thing about Lucerna is that it potentially allows us to give both. And giving both a checkpoint inhibitor and an anti-claudin 18.2 could potentially offer patients a prolonged survival, particularly since right now the FDA approvals are only in the front line, so that if you give zolbetuximab, you don't have a chance to give a checkpoint inhibitor in the second line. If you give a checkpoint inhibitor in the front line, you don't have a chance of giving zolbetuximab in the second line. So it really is a shame that we have to forgo one of these targeted therapies right now, and being able to give both might solve the problem.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive. And follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thank you again for listening to OncLive On Air.